You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Don Guerra.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, June 19th, 2018.
Parents will generally have an attorney, oftentimes a public defender, and the Department of Child Services has their attorney, but, you know, the kids actually don't have an attorney.
Later in the program, we'll hear from Monroe County Court-appointed Special Advocate Les Wadzinski about the needs of children in Monroe County. That's coming up in today's feature report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Janet Anderson tells about the 19th Century Club. Started as a reading club, the group eventually became the local council of women and founded the Bloomington Hospital and later the library. That's coming up in this week's edition of the Bicentennial Journal, looking back on 200 years of history in South Central Indiana. But first, your daily headlines.
Indiana Senators Joe Donnelly and Todd Young praised President Trump for his North Korean summit yesterday. In a bipartisan letter, the U.S. Senators praised Trump's commitment to the recovery of the remains of American service members from the Korean War. The remains of service members thought to still be in North Korea include those of 176 Hoosiers. In their joint statement, Donnelly and Young wrote, quote, "We applaud your commitment to restart the prisoner of war and missing in action recovery effort and to finally provide closure for the families that have waited for so long," unquote. President Trump spoke with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in Singapore last week. It was the first meeting between a sitting or former U.S. president and a North Korean leader.
The looming trade war between China and the United States is causing problems in the international recycling market. In Bloomington and Monroe County, uncertainty over global trade tariffs have caused government entities to consider charging residents for recycling for the first time. In response to the Trump administration's proposed tariffs, which are set to take effect in early July, China is set to impose its own tariffs, many of which would hurt the scrap metal market. China is a net importer of scrap metal from the United States. If the proposed tariffs are put in place, the demand for scrap metal would fall across the U.S. City of Bloomington Public Works Director Adam Wason says that's led the city and the county to consider charging residents for recycling.
We're not sure where things are headed right now. This is basically the end point answer. The worldwide recycling markets have taken a major downturn with, in particular with the Chinese markets. And, the end commodity, the end product of recycled commodities, that market has tightened up quite a bit. We're hearing from our processor, Hoosier Disposal or Public Services, that, that the cost on processing of recycling has skyrocketed recently. I don't know exactly what that'll mean for Bloomington long term. We're in discussion phase right now with Republic Services to kind of determine what this is going to look like in the future. We're still going to keep recycling like Bloomington always has done. But the idea that recycling is free is really just kind of a misnomer in the sense that, it definitely costs to pick up recycling. It definitely, whether it's the manpower, the labor, the vehicles, the all the equipment, et cetera, there's a cost to that. And now there's looking like there'll be additional processing costs that we haven't experienced in the past. We'll see where it goes. We don't have any end answers yet. Those conversations are continuing.
Regardless of whether or not the price for recycled goods stabilizes, Wason says the city will continue to offer recycling, although they're not quite sure what it would look like.
Bloomington does a great job recycling. We're going to continue to do so. And, we hope that the markets take a turn and that those commodities become more valuable here in the future. And we're able to, just continue serving the city as we always have.
Last week, the Monroe County Solid Waste District announced it will no longer accept plastic bags for recycling. The Solid Waste District says they will still accept other kinds of recyclable plastics.
The Richland Bean Blossom Community School Board has approved Assistant Superintendent Dr. Jerry Sanders to serve as Interim Superintendent of Schools. Former Superintendent Mike Wilcox resigned earlier this month after committing a financial reporting error that led to a $1.1 million overcollection of property taxes. Speaking in last night's school board meeting, RBB Board President Dana Carr acknowledged Wilcox's leadership.
We believe that we have come very far in the 5 years that he was here. Our STEAM initiative came during that time, working with our new building projects and becoming A schools and an A corporation. There's been some amazing achievements while he was here as superintendent, and we wish him success and prosperity in the future, and thank him for his service here.
Interim Superintendent Sanders thanked the board for the opportunity to serve the Richland Bean Blossom School District.
I hope that we can move forward and focus on those positives and keep the ball rolling and let the rest of the state know how good we actually are.
The board did not discuss how long Sanders may serve as interim superintendent while they search for Wilcox's permanent replacement. The RBB Schools Board also announced they will support two student mental health initiatives. First, a partnership with the Evansville-based nonprofit Youth First will put a full-time master's-level social worker in RBB schools. The social worker will work one-on-one with students and families, as well as work with students in their classrooms. Board member Deborah Mary asked Youth First Director of Operations Wade Lohorn how the social worker would balance confidentiality with an obligation to report abuses to the Indiana Department of Child Services.
Parents, grandparents, neighbors, they want to remain, you know, they don't want anyone to know. They want it to be a confidential report, but they're concerned about children being taken and things like that.
Sure.
So how is that working in this? Because we want something where we can guarantee parents, we're working with you here. We're not just out to take your children away and get you.
Yeah. The way that works is we are allowed to, regardless of where the referral comes from, we are allowed to see the child one time. And then if we want to continue working with that child, we communicate with the parents and we must have parental consent to continue working with them. If a case is brought to us and our child is brought to us, and in that first immediate meeting, or really at any point in the meeting, it's discovered that there's severe abuse and neglect in the home, there is that obligation to contact DCS. But that is not our goal, as you said. That is not our goal. Our goal is to work with these kids, work with the families. A lot of the work is around resourcing and helping to connect them to different community resources.
RBB officials have applied for a comprehensive counseling grant from the Lilly Endowment to help fund the position. The school system should know by June 30th whether or not they'll get the grant. Sanders says supporting mental health goes hand in hand with school safety. He and Lohorn say they are committed to putting a social worker in place with or without the Lilly grant.
RBB would be responsible for 48% of the direct costs of the social worker. Youth First will secure funds to pay for the remaining 52% of the cost of the social worker, as well as 100% of the cost of any programming. And Youth First will also cover the cost for overhead costs that might be ensued.
Board members also unanimously approved a partnership with the nonprofit Regional Opportunities Initiative for a graduation and career coach.
The graduation and career coach would provide services to at-risk students in grades 8 through 12 in academic, social, and career guidance.
Carr and Sanders say they see the position as also supporting positive mental health among students.
With the rapidly changing employment environment that we have, having someone specifically working in that area is highly beneficial to our students.
Absolutely. You know, any time that we can give our students a clear vision, a clear picture of their pathway to graduation, the more chances they have of being successful in graduating.
According to its website, the Regional Opportunities Initiative was established in 2016 to advance economic prosperity in Southwest Indiana by supporting education and workforce initiatives.
Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb announced yesterday that he will ask for another $25 million in appropriations to the state's Department of Child Services. As WFHB's Jonah Chester reports, the announcement comes on the heels of an independent investigation into the beleaguered agency.
Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb announced yesterday his plans to review and reform the state's Department of Child Services. The Department of Child Services is struggling to cope with a dramatic increase in the number of children in need of services such as foster care and counseling. That's due in large part to the opioid crisis, which is causing the agency's ability to provide services to children to strain under caseloads. Holcomb's announcement comes after a review of the state DCS found systemic dysfunction and a, quote, culture of fear, unquote, that contributed to widespread issues at the department. The review, which was commissioned last December, found numerous issues within DCS, many of which had already been well documented. The independent review was conducted by the Child Welfare Policy Group. It found that nearly half of DCS workers had caseloads which exceeded the legal limit. The group also found that the agency had a high rate of turnover driven by low pay and a toxic working environment. The review came on the heels of the very public departure of former DCS director Mary Beth Bonaventura. In her resignation letter, Bonaventura leveled harsh criticisms at Holcomb and his office, alleging the governor's appointee to the agency, Eric Miller, interfered with agency functions. Miller was appointed chief financial officer and deputy chief of staff at the agency after Holcomb took office. According to Bonaventura's resignation letter, the policies Holcomb and Miller enacted at the agency would, quote, all but ensure that children will die, unquote. In a press release from the governor's office, Holcomb highlights a few of the review group's 20 recommendations. Among the proposed measures are calls to treat and support families struggling with addiction, improved coordination among DCS's different branches, and a revision of internal DCS policies. The review also called for increased support for foster care families. The governor also announced his plans to dedicate $25 million from the state's budget surplus towards pay increase for DCS caseworkers. The governor did not comment on the department's current operating budget, which is currently $200 million over its $600 million two-year budget. Despite declining to take up any legislation to reform the DCS during its 2018 legislative session, the Indiana General Assembly approved its own task force to examine DCS and make recommendations for reformation last month. Governor Eric Holcomb's office did not return a request for comment on this story. For WFHB, I'm Jonah Chester.
And reporting live for WFHB, I'm Don Guerra.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Les Wadzinski has volunteered with Monroe County CASA for the past 6 years. In today's feature report, Wadzinski talks about the unprecedented demand for child advocates in our listening area and strains faced by child advocates, including those at the Department of Child Services.
My name is Les Wadzinski. I am a volunteer with Monroe County CASA. It's a CASA, court-appointed special advocate. Our mission is to, I guess, to put it quite simply, make sure no children slip through the crack. These are kids that are in the judicial system for reasons of neglect or abuse. They aren't lawbreakers or anything like that, but these are our kids that have been found by the court to be what they call a child in need of services, or more commonly called the ward of the state. So basically, these are kids that are in a home where something's not right, either due to abuse or neglect, and the parents just aren't taking care of the kids. And so therefore, the state has to step in. Now, having said that, the Department of Child Services are really the kind of the main go-to people for these sort of things, but they have a huge workload. Most of the case managers that I work with probably have double the amount of cases that they're supposed to have. And so that's where it's helpful to have CASA involved, because as a volunteer, I'm just have one case. Might have several kids in the same family, but so I'm able to devote more time into making sure everything is fine, that the kids' rights are represented, that the home is checked out, that, you know, basically they don't slip through the crack.
What kind of rights are we talking about when we're talking about the child's rights?
Okay, well, you know, it's kind of interesting because the parents will generally have an attorney, oftentimes a public defender, and the Department of Child Services has their attorney, but, you know, the kids actually don't have an attorney. And so we go to court, and, you know, there's periodic hearings and so on, and we're asked to present our findings to the judge and so on. And, you know, the rights are that the child in need of services is in a place where they're safe, and that there's some future plan going on as to either reunification with the family if the parents can get their act together, or an adoption process. And so we're there to make sure that all that happens. 2016, we had 465 cases. This year so far, and we're not done with the year yet, we've already had 615. So we're 150 more than what we had for the entire year last year. Right now we have about 120 volunteers, but we have 100 kids on the wait list that aren't being serviced this way with a CASA. And so we need 50 more volunteers. We do a lot of investigative work. If the parent, say, for example, is on probation, okay, we will check with the probation officer and make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to do. If the parent has been ordered to attend counseling or drug rehabilitation, something like that, we check on it, make sure it's actually happening. You know, we go to that agency and say, hey, is this person showing up? Are they doing what they're supposed to do? What are their what progress are they making, and so on? So we check all that out. We go to wherever the child is placed. It could be in a foster home. It could be with grandparents. Or sometimes a child is actually placed in that home if it's not considered to be dangerous, and we feel that, you know, the parents are making some progress but still need monitoring. And so we will make monthly home visits to make sure the kids are fed, they're clothed, they're going to school, that the residence is acceptable, you know, clean and that sort of thing. And so we do that sort of investigative work. And then every few months, there's a hearing to update the court as to what's going on. And so we have to submit a pretty extensive report on what we've found out. So if we've been to the school, talked to the teachers, we talked to the social workers, as I said, you know, probation officers, whatever, all that is documented that, yeah, you know, we've looked into this and here's what's going on. And it's really not a big brother, big sister program. You know, we are there more to advocate for the child in the legal system. And we don't consider that our role to become, you know, a friend, I guess, in a way, to where we're taking them to, you know, baseball games and stuff like that. In fact, we're supposed to try to, you know, maintain an objective viewpoint of things and not get too connected. And if the child needs that sort of thing, obviously, you know, we're going to be aware of that and can recommend that, connect them if they need to be. But yeah, there's just a lot of that going on. I mean, you do get to know these folks pretty well just by seeing them. I've had cases go on for 2 years, so I've seen them once a month for 2 years straight, and sometimes more often, and I get to know them pretty well. It's hard. I mean, there's no doubt. I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. It is a difficult thing, and it, you know, if dealing with this kind of nasty stuff is not for you, then you probably shouldn't do it, because it does take a lot of dedication. On the emotional side, there could be, you know, evidence of physical abuse, sexual abuse, you know, or just mental abuse, that sort of thing. Now, a lot of times you're not there to witness it, or most of the time you're not, because people behave when the CASA comes around, but you find out about it or, you know, whatever, there's investigations and so on. And so, you know, I guess mentally you just have to kind of look at it kind of clinically and not get too wrapped up in it. Try to just do what's right. You know, for example, you know, we've seen tapes of kids that have been interviewed at Susie's place, you know, for sexual abuse, but you gotta just try to deal with it, you know, and move forward. On the other side of the coin though, however, is the staff at CASA is really good and they're very supportive. The training is excellent. And then also I would say that the Department of Child Services, their case managers, they ought to get the Mother Teresa Award. You know, I mean, these folks are overworked and, you know, that's where we can step in to kind of help them out as well. And so we work very closely with them and, you know, hopefully we save some kids, you know, or at least get them in a good spot so they can get on with their life.
That was Monroe County Court-Appointed Special Advocate Les Wodzinski. Support for WFHB comes from listeners like you and from the IU Health Foundation, where local gifts stay local, serving patients for a healthier Bloomington.
And coming up next, the Bicentennial Journal, looking back on 200 years of history in South Central Indiana.
County's Bicentennial Committee presents the Bicentennial Journal, stories celebrating the rich history of Monroe County.
This is my Monroe County story. I'm Janet Anderson. I'm going to talk about the 19th Century Club that has been in Bloomington for 122 years continually. It was started in 1896 with six members calling themselves the 19th Century Bay Reading Club. This was a time when women stayed home, took care of their families, ran households, but still wanted some social activities. It was acceptable for them to meet in homes with friends, study, and debate with each other. Members would read books, have a review, discuss the books with the membership, and each member was required to participate. On February 1st, 1897, the membership delegates were elected to the Federation of City Clubs. Now, this later became the Local Council of Women. Every member of 19th Century Club joined LCW. The LCW was determined to have a hospital in Bloomington. And in 1906, the local council closed the trade for the Hopewell Place, the corner of First and Rogers, for $6,000 for a city hospital. The new hospital opened its doors November 30th. Over the years, our club donated money for the hospital. In 1917, the club furnished and maintained a room in the hospital. And we also bought the furniture, made the rugs, made the curtains, and then paid a maintenance fee every year to the hospital. It was started out at $15 and was increased to $20 in 1926. We've continued all these years to be involved with the hospital. But then the club decided to start a public library and asked the county commissioners permission to use a room at the courthouse. They agreed. Professor Alley donated his entire collection of books to the library, and the membership donated books and received books from friends. The library flourished. Books were donated constantly, and our members worked the library when it was open. In 1912, a delegation of 19th century members traveled east to apply to the Carnegie Foundation. The request was funded, and by 1918, the Carnegie Library opened at the current location of Monroe County Historic Society. 1936, the club decided to fund a scholarship for a Monroe High School student to attend Indiana University. And in 1966, another was established in memory of a longtime member who devoted her life trying to help children. These scholarships are still awarded each year. In the early 1900s, a difference in opinion of purpose develops. Some wanted it to be a service, and others wanted to continue the educational lessons. The group evolved into both. We continued the educational programs given by members until 1990s, and since then we have invited speakers. My membership goes back to the 70s, and I always remember the first book report I had to give. I was scared to death, and my colleagues were so gracious, and I soon learned this was a wonderful group of women, learned but not critical. One of my other vivid memories was when Dr. Wells was our guest speaker at my house. I was a nervous wreck. He came in so gracious, and we had a wonderful, wonderful meeting with him. He's such a part of Bloomington history and IU history that it was a treat to have him with us. We have wonderful moments recorded in our meetings and treasury reports dating back to the very first meeting, and also membership yearbooks. We also have a handwritten copy of the first membership list of Local Council of Women. These records are now stored at the Monroe County Public Library. Our history's long and a real part of the celebration, 122 years and still active.
Join us next week for another edition of the Monroe County Bicentennial Journal.
Support for the Bicentennial Journal and WFHB come from Monroe County and Visit Bloomington. More information about Monroe County's Bicentennial is available online at monroecounty200.us.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Jonah Chester and Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
The Bicentennial Journal is produced by Kate Welch with help from Joyce Poling. Our engineer is Wes Martin. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumstein, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. Executive producer, Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Don Guerra. Stay tuned for Counterspin, fairness and accuracy in reporting's weekly radio show, providing a critical examination of national headlines. That coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a daily local news volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcasts of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.